The following talk was given at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on February 15, 2026. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good to see all of you today. So I just wanted to start out by, in a way, apologizing. I don't know how this is going to come out, but it's like I was preparing for this talk actually quite extensively, to be honest with you, over the past several days, and I couldn't connect the dots. It was like when I would sit down and try to really articulate what it was I was trying to convey, you know, in this talk, it's like it wasn't connecting for me, you know. And I talked to, you know, a couple of the teachers here over the years about how to present these teachings, and one of the things that always stands out to me is like connect, you know, what you're like be clear about what you're trying to say, and connect it to an overarching theme, more or less, and just more or less be clear about what it is you're trying to say, you know. So I was trying to do that to the best of my ability in preparation for today, and I was just, for whatever reason, I was just hitting a block, and I'm just like, what the heck is going on? I would like sit down for an hour at a time and like try to really hash out what it was, and I just kept, I was stalling out, you know. And then it's like, you know, I reflected a little bit about what the heck was going on. I think that's pretty natural. I mean, we all kind of run into these blocks occasionally. You know what happens? I'm sure writers run into that all the time. Writer's block, stuff like that. But then just reflecting back on the past year, couple years of my practice here at Dharma Field. Basically, early on in my practice, I really paid attention to what the teachers here, how they live their life, you know, and what it meant or what it looked like, I suppose, to live a monk's life. You know, it just became very evident to me that regular practice was important. You know, that just the regularity in practice was very helpful, you know. And so, to the best of my ability over the years, how I've tried to set up my practice is basically the full schedule here at Dharma Field. You know, two sittings in the mornings, one or two sittings in the evenings, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then on Fridays, and then the full Sunday schedule. You know, and so I've tried to adhere to that to the best of my ability with the changes that life presented. Okay, starting way back when I was going to school. And just as life does, it happens and things come up, you know. I've gotten busier and busier. I didn't think that was going to be the case. I thought once I graduated school, I would have more time, you know, to dedicate to practice in particular. Hasn't worked out that way, you know. And one of the main things that stands out to me in my conversations with the teachers here, and my teacher in particular, was don't busy your life with too many things, you know. That was kind of a piece of advice or whatever you want to say that was given to me. And so I've tried to adhere to that, but I have not, you know, done so. You know, I have not been very successful at that. And just reflecting back over the past year of my life, it's like I don't know that I've gone into great detail, and I won't today, but just more than I have in the past, the difficulties that I've run into over the past year are this is just everyday stuff that happens, but it seems like in quick succession, you know, several big things have come up, financial being one of them. You know, it's like we've had our daughter in daycare for, you know, several years now, which is our biggest expense, biggest monthly expense. I mean, it is expensive to have kids in daycare. And so trying to, you know, we have three kids at home, and trying to stay, you know, stay afloat financially, not lose housing. And my partner has experienced housing insecurity at different points in her life. So this is a very, impactful thing to her. And so trying to stay ahead of the financial stuff. Meanwhile, our AC unit went out, during the summer, last summer. We not only had to replace the AC, but also the furnace because they're one unit. That was a big to-do. Garage door opener failed, my car broke down. I got told by the mechanic that I had to replace it, otherwise it was just going to break down anyways. So all these things, just successfully kept happening. Meanwhile, we're in the last year of daycare for our daughter. So it's like we just want to get past the finish line and get some rest from all this stuff. Meanwhile, these things just kept coming up and coming up. Credit card debt is accruing, which is the most tenacious of debt. Just very hard to get out of that once you go down that road. Legal issues. We've had some very significant legal issues regarding parenting, splitting of parenting time, and all the host of different things come up with that. So we've had to hire an attorney, which is like another many thousands of dollars that have come up. Our most significant bill that we've had over the past year. I've been trying to stay ahead with coaching my daughter's hockey, which I love. I've talked about that before, and I wouldn't change that for anything. I want to do that, right? But it is a time commitment, right? So all of these things, the point is, I won't go into any more detail, but all of these things have come up over the past year, which has slowly and incrementally pulled me away from Dharma Field. Not to mention that I live 40 minutes away. I live in Blaine, so it's been more challenging for me to get here on a regular basis. And so I've in a way fallen into judgment with that at certain points. Like, why can't I just get here and have a regular, sustainable practice over time? Well, at the core of the regularity and the living a monk's life or whatever you want to call it is also non-judgment. So it's not being judgmental of that stuff either. Every moment is just this. It's always just thus, can we continue to watch our mind and not deviate, and get caught in our own stories that we tell ourselves and the delusion that we often fall into? So that's been a part of the practice as well. And when I was conceptualizing or thinking about this talk today, one person in particular kept coming to my mind, and that's Norm Randolph. And he always had a way it's just almost like his being, and just how his practice, I was able to see his practice over a number of years. And he always said, our practice is doing our best, And so, and he didn't just say that. I mean, it was like conveyed in his very essence, or, that's who Norm was. There was a gentleness to who he is. As I'm saying this, nothing is going to hit the mark. And I just had to say that up front. But just encouraging. There's an encouragement in hearing Norm convey these teachings and watching his practice over the years, where this really is about just not judging, especially our own practice, ourselves. And so admitting my shortcomings to you guys simultaneously, one of the things that I've come to rely on over the years is that I try to be authentic, especially with myself, and how I show up and try to be as wholehearted about this as I can be, which at times is very challenging, So in a way, I'm apologizing to the community for not being able to be here on a consistent basis. But also, it's like life shows up, and we do our best and we just move forward one step at a time, and hopefully we can just carry out this practice regardless of what it currently looks like. Okay. So I didn't know how that was going to come out, but I just felt the need to express that. Likely, and in this talk today, it's like I'm not able to connect the dots, so I apologize if it's muddy and all that kind of stuff. But there was one story that I came across that resonated with me, and it really I just got done teaching a class, knowing the true nature of reality. It's probably not it, but it's something along those lines, which is the unlocatable self and dependent arising. Or actually, it's reversed. Dependent arising and the unlocatable self is what it used to be called. You know, very helpful to prepare and teach that class, actually. So this story is sort of like resonated with me in the context of that class. This is the story of the king and the lute. Once a king was resting in his high chambers when a melody of such haunting beauty drifted through the window that it stopped his breath. Driven by a desperate need to own that enchantment, he commanded his ministers to bring that sound to him. They returned with a lute, a magnificent object of polished wood and silver strings, and placed it on a silk cushion. The king sat before it in silence, waiting for the music to begin, but the instrument remained mute. Growing frantic, he demanded to know where the music was hiding. When his ministers explained that the sound was not a thing to be held, the king's frustration turned to violence. He took a knife and sliced the strings. He heard only the snap of tension. He took a hammer and smashed the wooden frame into splinters, searching the hollow belly for the source of the sweetness. Finally, he burned the wood to ash and threw the gray dust into the wind. Wiping his hands, he declared the lute a lie and deception, certain that he had been fooled by an empty box. Might be a little extreme, but I think we can hopefully see what the confusion is, right? He was searching for this music, a thing, but he couldn't understand where the music was or what it was. And so this is really kind of pointing to the heart of our confusion in a lot of ways. And it has to do with substantiality and what objects are. So in the Heart Sutra, it says, form does not differ from emptiness. Emptiness does not differ from form. That which is form is emptiness. That which is emptiness, form. And so the king was very much confused about the substantiality of the music that he heard. And he wanted to get a hold of the music. He wanted to hear it again. He wanted to know how he could be the owner of the music, you know. And so grasping is our futile attempt to freeze the moment. Yet the note only lives and arises, you know, it arises and fades away. So there's no substantial thing to get a hold of. But yet the king was confused about this. He wanted to get a hold of the form, you know, of the music. In a way, he wanted to hold on to, he wanted a plastic rose, you know. He wanted the thing, and he wanted it to last and be permanent, so that he could have enjoyment from it whenever he wanted, right? And I think that's pretty common for us, is that we hear something, we see something, we feel something pleasant, and we want to get a hold of it, you know. But of course, what the king was failing to see is that everything is a process, you know. There's nothing that has a separate, permanent, independent identity. But he very much was confused and believed that the music was a permanent thing that he could get a hold of, or a separate, persistent thing that he could get a hold of. So this unlocatable self or music, it was nothing but the change itself. It was nothing but the interdependent, you know, interdependent nature of all beings ultimately. And this was appearing or coming into, so that we could hear it or he could hear it, throughout the myriad of incomprehensible conditions. So not only was the music not a thing that he could grasp and get a hold of, but it was also inseparable from all conditions, you know, all beings. And when we try to pinpoint exactly what that is, or what beings that it's dependent upon, we inevitably run, it's wholeness, it's totality, it's just this. It's inseparable from the whole. So we suffer because we believe that these mind objects are substantial. And this is our fundamental delusion that we consistently fall into, is that we really believe in persistence. We believe in substantiality. And so this is the heart of what the king was his actual suffering, what Dukkha was arising from, is his belief in substantiality. Wanting to get a hold. So right view is not a belief to hold on to, but rather it's just seeing the arising and ceasing without falling into the trap of this exists or doesn't exist. In the Xinsheng Min, it goes on and says, to set what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. So we can obviously probably relate to what the king was experiencing. He wanted the pleasant. He wanted the thing that he liked, which was the music. He wanted to hold on to it. And just doing that is dukkha. It's our grasping, wanting to hold on to it. And that's where dukkha arises from. And even I don't know, prior to that, it's our leaning mind that sees separation and leans towards or away. In this case, the king was leaning towards. He wanted, you know, he had a desire. He was grasping. So our ordinary mind is full of picking and choosing all day, every day. We're led around by our likes and dislikes. It's very much even the core of, if you've ever tried to explain to somebody or started to develop a new friendship, you start to get to know each other. And we try to explain who we are. And we often explain who we are through our likes and dislikes. You know, this doesn't happen so much anymore. I don't even know how new friendships as an adult grow and develop, to be honest with you. But when I was a kid, it was like, adolescent years, maybe even younger than that. One of the ways that you develop new friendships is like through a taste in music, for example. I've said this many times before. I used to really enjoy hip-hop music, you know. And so I would start a conversation like, hey, what music are you into? If somebody's like death metal, I'm like, okay, well, have a good day. You know what I mean? If somebody was like, hip-hop music, I was like, okay, what do you like? You know what I mean? And that's how a bond started to develop. And that's just one way. You know, sports, you know, whatever you can pick out there. But our likes and dislikes very much is closely related to who we are as a sense of person, especially when we're younger. And so, yeah. I think you get the point. So nothing stands alone. So this music, this sense of I, this self, anything that you can pull out from totality, or you know, the appearances of mind, can even say it right now. But anything that you can pull out of this picture is dependent on all beings, on all conditions. You know, and this ultimately leads back to the whole reality. It's not leads back to, but it's inseparable from the whole. So the other part about this king's confusion is not treating these objects with maybe respect. You know, there's a saying in How to Cook Your Life, or Instructions for the Zen Cook, which is a fascicle by Dogen, where he says, handle even a single leaf of a green so that it manifests the body of Buddha. And so clearly when the king, especially when he was smashing this loot, he wasn't handling this as if it was the body of Buddha. And so he was very much violating a precept, which I just looked this up before I started the talk today, which is not clinging to a single form. It's called the precept of not being avaricious. And so the king was clinging to a form. This form, in his mind, was this the music that the lute played. And then he switched to the object, the lute as being a separate, distinct object. And he wanted something from the lute, and he wanted the music. So there's all kinds of greed happening in the king's mind that's presented in this story. And so this is, hopefully we can learn to, even the lute that we're confused about is the body of Buddha. This is reality, totality. And it's inseparable from the whole. And so by not treating this as such, the king was very much violating the precepts. In his own mind, he was very confused. Is my confusion coming across to you guys yet? Man, I don't know why. I just really struggled with this talk for some reason, this story really resonated with me. And I could see the threads, especially through the lens of that course that I was just teaching. And I was trying to convey what it is that I was seeing in this story. And I just kept hitting roadblocks, So I do apologize for that. I guess that happens sometimes. And kind of the point in me bringing up the preface of this talk and the issues and all that kind of stuff is that even in the midst of our confusion, our delusion, our inability to express, we're inseparable from the whole, And so just a recognition or seeing that, there's nothing to be afraid of or run from, and it's okay, So I knew that I wasn't going to come out very eloquently today, but I just got to say I showed up, and am doing the best that I can with this, and I really have a deep fondness or... how do I say this? I appreciate being part of a community, of practitioners that are sincere. And so I wanted to, in a way, express my gratitude. I don't even think I'm going to go on, you guys. I was going to go into form and substance are like dew on the grass, destiny like the dart of lightning, emptied in an instant, vanished in a flash. Had a whole series of different things I was going to say about that, which just seemed fitting, And then our leaning of mind. I've already talked about that a little bit. Which is where, we get confused. We're confused that there's things out there that we want, and there's separation, and then we lean. We lean towards this or away from that. I'm going to bypass all that and just open it up for questions or comments today. That's what I got today.
Thank you. So what's the main point you want us to take away?
Yeah, good question. I don't know.
You don't have one?
Yeah.
I mean, would it be the last thing you just said?
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest with you. There's this story, that I was hoping was going to convey what our confusion is, That's the essence of what I wanted to convey, is that we're confused about what this is, And we fall into that over and over again. But then I think in the course of preparing for this talk, more or less, I wanted to convey that it's okay if you make mistakes, almost. You know what I mean? It's okay to just show up however you're showing up, That you don't have to be, you don't have to have fear, almost. And it's the teaching of you are Buddha, you know, which I bring up often. But it's more or less that. So there's a couple different things going on there. It started out to be the essence of our confusion, or the source of our confusion, which is that we see substantiality where there really isn't any. You know. Is that helpful?
Yeah, of course, yeah. I also want to say thank you for talking about Norm.
Yeah.
I miss him. And my very first lesson in meditation was through Norm at what's the place down on the lake?
MZMC.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And the very first thing he said was, "Do your best." So mm-hmm. It hasn't changed any.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So thanks for your talk. What came to mind for me is Suzuki, I think, said, everyday life is our practice. I think all of us wonder what our practice is sometimes. Like, I know I do. Is it just in the Zendo? Is it only showing up here? No, it's showing up everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage you, you don't have to apologize to me anyway. Mm-hmm. Everyday life is our practice. You are practicing in everything you do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, this too shall pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Thank you.
I was just thinking, the whole showing up thing. When you were giving your talk about the king with the lute, I kind of was thinking about when I come here to sit in the mornings, the thing that I might be grabbing onto is, well, meditation should be like this, right? I should have a quiet mind. I should do this and this and this and this and this. And usually it doesn't happen that way. And I think what's helpful is realizing, well, whatever is happening is happening. You know, if I have a day where I'm like just very scattered, or maybe a little tired, or maybe very calm, that's what it is, you know? Yeah. So, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that, and thank you all for your comments this morning, and one of the things is like realizing that, how do I say this? Delusion is inseparable from enlightenment, right? So even if we're confused, you know, and sitting on the cushion, if we notice that we're confused or falling into delusion, we're grasping, you know, at the objects of mind that are showing up, and starting to develop like I want to say tolerance or something like that, where it's like you can see that and not judge it either. But once you see that, you're not in the delusion anymore, you know. And so that's our practice, is just noticing that over and over again for a lifetime, I'm sorry to say, you know. And so there's no end to this. And so it really is just another thing Norm said, is that this is a very compassionate practice, you know. It didn't seem that way at first. It seemed very rigid and hardcore, you know, for lack of a better word, probably. But over time, I came to see exactly what he was pointing out. And this is a very compassionate practice, but it's through our own judgments and you know, confusion that it seems not compassionate, you know. And so that's our practice. Just come back to just this, you know, over and over. Where there's that saying, "May we exist in purity, in muddy water like a lotus." May we exist in
muddy water with.
Yeah, got a little dyslexia there. But yeah, exactly, you know. So thank you for your comments. Anything else?
Thanks for your talk today, Bo. I took your class and I really appreciated your class. It was a really good time to reflect on some deep teachings. And I think that came through pretty clear today for me. So I appreciated that. I always love a story. I think stories really connect, and I enjoy the story you shared. It's a beautiful story. Mm-hmm. And different ways of looking at it were coming up for me, but as I was sitting here, I was thinking about, I started reading Everyday Zen by Joko Beck, and she talks about how things that come up, we don't get to a point where we can just kind of eliminate them or let them go or release them. We have to kind of wear them out. Mm-hmm. They just get worn out. We become exhausted of them. And that reminded me of the king just hearing the music, which is like coming to this practice in a way. It's like hearing that music, and you're trying to hold on to it. It's like destroying this thing. You're wearing it out until maybe someday the king it'll come back to him. But it just, that's what came up for me, was the destruction of the Luddhas, just kind of exhausting all those things where we think, you know, like you're saying, where that, we think that substantiality is, and just wearing it out and finding something different.
Yeah. Thank you, Aaron. Really appreciate that. And I gotta say, I appreciate all your comments and dialogue in the class as well. So thank you. Yeah.
You have a comment from Denny online.
Okay. Morning, Bo.
Morning.
Morning, everyone. This is more of a comment, I guess, than a question. I appreciate you sharing all your everyday life issues. We actually have a lot of similar likes. Hip hop, three kids, financial issues. So my point is, I like to tie things into the Buddhist teaching and my everyday practice. So all those issues, if you will, I think of as relative truths that will always be there. And our everyday practice, whether it's meditation, going to work, you know, fixing stuff around your house, playing with your kids or whatnot. I'm not going to make sense right now, but it's kind of tying it into our practice, which is just to see. I always hear Steve Hagen, because I'm diving so deep in all the online courses, just see. Everything else is kind of argument, intellectualization. So just see the, I don't know. I'm not making sense, but that's kind of, what I think of when I hear you talk, and just our everyday life. It's all relative truths that will always be there. And, some days are worse than others, but our practice gives us some regularity and, just kind of a constant, truth, if you will, of seeing the direct experience. I don't know if I'm making sense, but more of a sharing of that than a question.
Yeah, thank you, Denny. It did make sense, actually. And I heard you talk about the 83 problems, which is something I was going to bring up today, but it slipped through the cracks. We all have problems that come up every day, you know. And then it's like, what's the 84th problem? We want to not have any problems, you know, which are, you know, if we can somehow get help with that one, the 83 problems aren't really problems, right? Thanks for sharing, Danny. It did come through. Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.